Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, history friends. Welcome to part 3 of the Tommy Riken.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Mental interview. I hope you guys have been enjoying it, because I've certainly enjoyed bringing it to you guys. It's something I never thought would be possible, and it's something that I know for a fact is going to be very well received. So in the last two episodes, we've been building towards this conclusion. Tommy Reichenthal went through an awful lot as a child, and he tried to put his life back together as best as he could. But at a certain point, of course, he must have decided to listen to those voices in the back of his head. He must have decided that he couldn't ignore what had happened to him any longer, and that as painful as it must have been, he had to talk about it. For over 50 years, he stayed silent. But now in this episode, we hear about what it was like to talk about his experiences, and why he decided, why he had that watershed moment in his life, that epiphany that made him persuaded of the importance of talking when no one else seemed to be talking, and of talking about subjects and topics that weren't always necessarily popular, but needed to be heard. Tommy talks a good bit here about his reasons for wanting to meet with his former SS guard at Belsen, a woman called Hilda Lisevich, and how she led him then, in the midst of a new but eerily familiar European crisis, to begin filming a new documentary. So first, when trying to get in contact with Hilda, he was filming Close to Evil, which essentially talked about his efforts to get closer and to eventually talk with her. And now, in the more recent documentary, which myself and my wife actually watched on Valentine's Day, will you believe, Condemned to Remember, Tommy Reichenthal examined the current course of events in Europe and around the world, and asked if the rise of hateful language, of extremist opinions, and of ignorant, classless behavior is a signal of things to come. Tommy was then good enough to answer some of the questions I had for him. In particular, you guys might be interested to know the answer he had to a specific situation in Poland. I couldn't, and I can't, stay quiet about what the Poles have done lately and how disgusting I think it is. So I thought it was only right to ask Tommy what he thinks about a law that was passed in Poland in the last few months, which makes it illegal for anyone to say that the Poles had any role to play in the Holocaust. When, of course, there's ample, and unfortunately ample, and tragic testimony to the fact that the Poles, victims though they were in the Second World War, did have a role to play in the Holocaust, just as did every other occupied country. So I hope you guys enjoy it. This is the final part of my interview with Tommy Reichenthal, and I don't really know what else to say except enjoy. A huge thanks to you guys for listening to this and engaging with this as you have already. I knew that you would, but it's been great, and I've really enjoyed passing on some of the messages you guys have had for Tommy Reichenthal and hearing his responses. Tommy's story is essential, and the service he did for us is obviously immense. So if you haven't already, please do spread the word and share what you've heard here. Tell people that there is a podcast that holds a Holocaust survivor's voice, and that his voice deserves to be heard, and not just heard, but also properly listened to. If you guys would like to talk more about this, by all means do send me a line, and I'll be happy to. One more time, wdfpodcast@hotmail.com is where you can email me if you would like to pass any message on to Tommy Reichenthal. Whatever that might be, don't be discouraged or worried. He's a very approachable guy, he's a very friendly guy, he's a very generous guy. All of these things I learned while talking to him in his house and having tea with him shortly afterwards. So guys, this is it, the last episode of the interview. The next voices you hear will be mine and Tommy's.
From this, at the time, the Holocaust Education Trust heard about it. Person that organized it brings me up, and she said, I hear you're a survivor and think I would like to speak to you. She came here, and we talked, and then she asked me if I will appear on the Holocaust commemoration, which we do every January. And I said I couldn't speak. It's still too fresh. Imagine after 70 years. I will break down. I'm not able to do it. But my son can. I will write a thing and my son can read it. So she said, just come there and light the candles. So my son did the presentation. It lasted about 5 minutes. And talk about me. But that was the moment that suddenly I realized that I'm one of the last witnesses to this horrific crime that was committed. And I have to speak about it because anybody younger than me couldn't remember. I was 9 years old. I was, if somebody was there at seven, they wouldn't remember anything. Anybody older than me, it's passing away. So I am still one of the last witnesses, and today I'm saying it still. And therefore I should speak. Not only that, but I owe it to the victims that the memory is not forgotten. I lost 35 members of my family. I want to keep this memory alive. And I started... eventually, I went to gave a lecture. I really forced myself, you know. It was very painful for me at the time. I remember many times I broke down. And it was because when you're speaking about it, you're reliving your past. Yeah. And sometimes it becomes so vivid that you're suddenly in a position that you think, it's really true. Then you break down. I went over this thing and it just became something that I started to do. I did 2 lectures every week. I couldn't go to holidays or anything, only when the school was and the bookings were coming in. Till 2 years ago I got very sick. At the time, I had booking 2 years in advance. Imagine in 2016, I had booking for 2018, for this year.
Amazing, you know? Amazing.
I only could go on holiday when the school was on holiday, because otherwise I had to cancel the thing people were expecting.
Yeah.
While I was doing it all this, I got many accolades. One of the biggest one was I got an Order of Merit from the German President Joachim Gauck, which was a great honor. I remember at the time when the ambassador rang me that the president decided to give me this honor. I didn't even know what it was. And he said, will you accept it? Because, you know, some people said, I don't need you.
Of course.
But for me, it was a great honor, because I was getting it for something that the German recognized. What I'm doing, I'm talking about what they did.
Yeah.
You know, but they recognize it as something that shouldn't be forgotten.
Yeah.
This did happen, and therefore I respected it, and I said, of course I will receive it. Then I got the Person of the Year award, the International Person of the Year, from the Irish people, which was a great honor as well.
Yeah.
Many accolades there from the ambassadors here in Ireland. Crystal thing.
Amazing, Got a desk full of them. It's amazing.
That people are talking. And of course, I was on all the channels, and all the programs.
Yeah.
Late Late Show.
Yeah.
And all these people were interviewed by all the different interviewers. And what I'm also very proud of that... I have three honorary doctorates, one for Menuto University, honorary doctorate from literature.
Wow.
From Trinity College, I got the honorary doctor of law.
Yeah.
And from Dublin City University, I got honorary doctor of philosophy.
Wow. It's going to call you doctor, I can tell.
Well, you could, because some countries, as honorary doctor, they don't allow you to put doctor. It's a different sign.
Mm.
But apparently here in Ireland, I can use the title doctor. And when I get any post from Menute, or I always get the thing, Dr. Thomas Reichenthal. And I have the thing actually... upstairs, Dr. Truman Reichenthal. Well, I have my visiting cards. I don't put doctor there. But when I will need to print them again, they always say, what you ashamed of it that you have a doctor, you know. And I said, I'm not that I'm ashamed of it, but I feel it demeans the real doctors. And sometimes when I... speaking in colleges and people are going to go to higher education, I said, if you're going to make a doctorate, do it the way I did it. I didn't need to go through all the things. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, you definitely earned it.
Today, as I said, I didn't speak about my experiences for 55 years. Today, they can't stop me
speaking about it.
I don't know if you have enough some question.
Well, just a few. I mean, just think that the obvious one really is, does it ever get any easier? Like, did speaking about it help you come to terms with it?
Well, it's I can't say it, because in fact when I go to speak about it, you know, there is two ways that you speak about it. First way, you speak to other people. So in other words, your friend and you, so you know, I was a Holocaust survivor. And then it's the way that I'm speaking, which you speak to public. So from the beginning, it was very, very difficult. You know, I would have 300, 400 students formed to me, and suddenly my face is full with tears.
Yeah.
Very embarrassing. Yeah. You know. Today, it's still happening sometimes, but today I would take, they know that I'm in trouble because I have water on the table and I have to drink a little water or, you know, to hide it.
Of course.
And people, when I say hide, they said, why should you hide it?
Yeah.
You're telling the truth.
Exactly.
This is, you're not embarrassed because of somebody else. We don't see it that way.
Yeah.
We only see, not only this, sometimes when I, especially in the girls' schools when I speak, you speak about the horror yourself, I see it on your face when I spoke, you get in. Some of the girls, they burst in tears, you know, and I'm speaking, and I see it, and then it makes you, of course. So, but today, I must say one thing, that the Holocaust, there must have been some harm did to me, but I really don't have any nightmare or anything like this. I really tackle the problem very well, and I go by motto that I always talk about is make peace with the past so it doesn't spoil your present.
Oh, wow.
And that's the thing. I made peace with my past.
Yeah.
And I know that you're going to ask me about the film that I wanted to meet, SS Guard. And that's one of the things, it's the close to evil. The name is, of course, because I was close to evil.
Yeah.
I wanted to meet this SS woman. She was accused of killing two people. She stood trial. She got 1 year prison term, which was the lightest prison term that some of the guards in Belgium got. I mean, there were 12 people that were executed, and then from 20 years up to 1 year, several were sentenced, and there were some of them were acquitted, actually. And this was the first trial after the war in Lunenburg, where 42 guards or people responsible in Belgian-Belsen were tried. And I discovered that this woman lives in Hanover. I researched her and everything, and eventually I got in touch with her, and I was in correspondence with her daughter, and they were prepared to meet me. And at the time, I sort of rang to my producer.
Yeah.
And I said to him, you know, I'm going to meet an SS woman that was in Belgian-Belsen at the same time. She was one of my jailers at the same time that I was there.
Wow.
And when he heard that, he said, what? You're going to meet a thing? Well, if you're going to meet one of the thing, I want to be there with a camera.
Yeah.
And that's how that film came about.
Wow.
Of course, up to the last moment, she was prepared to meet me. But when it's come to the crunch, she declined. For the simple reason, because she gave interviews to Belgian-Belsen archive, she gave interviews to historians, she gave an interview to students. But all these people were listening to her.
Yeah.
She could tell them what she...
Yeah.
You know, she was still a denier. She was telling a lot of lies and everything.
Yeah.
But suddenly, when it's come to her that she had to meet me, she can't tell me anything... Because I was there.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't speak to me.
The whole fact that you went to her, like, did that take a lot of courage on your own part, even facing up to that?
Many people ask me. They said, "What would you have asked her?
Yeah.
Why would you have spoken to her?"
Yeah.
The whole thing that I wanted, I didn't want to speak about Belgian-Belsen, about all this. The whole idea was, What I wanted was some kind of acknowledgement from her that she was interviewed by various people, as I mentioned, and to the archive. In none of them she ever showed any regret.
Right.
Or she said, I'm sorry that it happened. Or,
yeah.
It was terrible what happened at the time.
Yeah.
It was a mistake. In none of them. What I thought, and I wrote to her this, I specifically said, I won't speak about the past. I won't. After all these years, surely you know this was wrong.
Yeah.
You know, she's still alive.
But yeah.
She's 95 or 96 years old. I wanted to hear it from her.
Yeah.
She said to me, Tommy, you know, it was a mistake.
Mm.
I didn't even want her to apologize for herself.
Yeah.
I wrote, I don't want you to apologize to me. But apologize in a general term. I'm sorry what happened or something like that. That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that I wanted to have an interview with her or anything.
Mm.
And if she would have done it, I would have shaken hands. It wasn't that I would have forgiven her.
Yeah.
I can't forgive her.
Mm.
But I would have made some kind of a reconciliation between the perpetrator and the victims. She's one of the last perpetrators.
Yeah.
I'm one of the last victims.
Mm-hmm.
And we did some kind of a reconciliation. We recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my opinion, she was a victim of her time.
Mm-hmm.
She was brainwashed. She was taught everything she was doing was the right thing.
Yeah.
And I put myself sometime in the shoes. If I was born, not where I was born, if I was born in Germany, to a German family, who knows what I would have done?
Yeah.
She's a victim as well.
Mm.
That's my thought. Some people can't understand.
It's amazing.
And you didn't see the first film, Till the Tenth Generation.
No, I didn't see that.
Well, that was my autobiography.
Oh, okay.
And we filming with my brother and with Martin. They say, what the hell you want to meet this woman?
Yeah.
She's a murderer.
Yeah.
They can't understand it. That what I was prepared to do, you know. It's on the film.
Yeah.
You know? They said, what you want to tell this? And she's a Holocaust denier.
Yeah.
You know? She's a victim as well.
Yeah.
She comes from a village, a peasant girl.
Mm.
Suddenly she become a SS woman.
Yeah.
Here she has the leather strap.
Yeah.
She's beating people. She's giving order. She was in the Hitlerjugend as a girl.
Yeah.
Well, it's not Hitlerjugend. It was the girls' movement.
League of German Maidens, kind of, yeah.
So already they started from there to
brainwash
her.
Yeah.
By the time she was a woman, I mean, she was only 23, 24 year old when she had this position.
Yeah.
She can't make judgment.
Yeah.
She was a victim of something terrible.
Yeah.
But she thought she's doing the right thing.
Mm.
But I would have thought after 70 years.
Yeah.
She would
realize it was wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was wrong.
Yeah.
But still today, she's the same person that she was then.
Yeah.
That's what really hurts.
Yeah. You know? I just think it's just so inspirational how, after everything you've been through, you're still trying to see things from her side. Like, so many other people would just not even want anything to do with her, and they wouldn't want to think about what she went through or anything. Amazing, Tommy, amazing. I mean, I want to ask as well about, because you did another documentary recently called Condemned to Remember. And it was, in many ways, more current because you looked at like the rise of the far right in different countries, and you also looked at more recent like events like massacres in Bosnia, for example. Very touching and an excellent documentary. My wife and myself were crying at several points in it. It's very, very good. But I just wanted to ask, like, seeing the rise of the far right in your home in Slovakia, seeing Slovakia for Slovaks, like, and that man who was the governor, I think, of that village you were from, or you
he was of Banská Bystrica, Kotlíba.
Mm.
Yeah, he. This party is they live by the ideology of Joseph Tiso.
Mm.
He admires Joseph Tiso. So the ideology is the same. And we must remember that the Holocaust did not start with gas chamber.
Mm.
Holocaust started with whisper, with taunt, abuse.
Mm.
The murder was the last stage.
Yeah.
After the war, we said, never again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we thought, never again.
Yeah.
And while we were on this mission, in fact, when we started Condemned to Remember, we started with actually the last chapter of Hilda Lisiewicz.
Yeah.
She's still a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And she might stand trial. She might be, maybe she might be by accident, because my aim was not to get her into trouble.
Mm.
Quite the opposite. I wanted to something good coming out of it.
Sure.
But it was a German person that when he saw the film, that he brought a prosecution against her.
Wow.
Because we discovered that not only what she did in Belgen-Belsen, she participated also in a death march.
Right.
And according to the German law today, if you participate in something, that crime was committed there, you are a participant in the crime.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you can be trial on that. You can't trial her on the same thing that she was prosecuted for murdering two people.
Sure.
But if you can prove that she was at a death march and people were shot or harmed, you are a participant in the crime. So you don't need a witness to say, I saw you doing
it.
But the fact that you were there when this was happening, you are guilty.
Yeah.
This prosecution was dropped. And we went there, and then it was revived. But we went there in this last documentary, Condemned to Remember, to see why they dropped the prosecution.
Right.
While we were doing this film, all these things suddenly happened in Europe with the refugees, what was happening. And I said to my producer, I said, Jerry, you know, this reminds me of late 1939, when Jews were trying to escape Nazi Germany and nobody wanted them. These people are being persecuted, murdered, raped, and they're trying to find a sanctuary somewhere. They're coming to Europe. And again, the Europe that said never again, refusing them entry. Where should they go? Commit suicide? I mean, they're not coming because they want better life. They're coming because they want to save their life. They want to live like a human being.
Yeah.
And he said, let's follow it.
Yeah.
And we did this thing. And we did the film Condemned to Remember, because I'm condemned to remember what is happening, and I seeing it here in Ireland in 1939. The Irish wouldn't take any Jews.
Yeah.
You know, so tragedy that they could have saved a lot of people, and it wouldn't have been just good for the Jews, but it would have been good for Ireland, because the Jewish people are very enterprising, and they were prepared to bring here factories and employ Irish people and everything. But unfortunately, it didn't happen. So then I was participating in some debates about the thing, And we started to film the film Condemned to Remember.
I then asked Tommy Reichenthal of his thought process for including one of the victims of the Srebrenica massacre in Serbia in July 1995, where 8,000 Muslim Bosniaks, mainly men and boys, in and around the town of that same name, were killed during the Bosnian War. And he had the following to say.
Srebrenica is very real proof that things can happen again.
Yeah.
Srebrenica happened in Central Europe, not in 1945.
Yeah.
In 1995, in civilized society.
Yeah.
A genocide. This was a genocide because they, any man or boy they caught, they killed.
Yeah.
They wanted to kill the Muslims, you know, to stop having children and all that thing. And it happened, and that's why it was important to bring this particular part. But of course, I brought the part of Slovakia, which was very important, that this Slovakia for Slovak, the slogans, it's the same that they were shouting in the 40s.
Yeah.
It is a dangerous problem. Maybe in the stage where I'm talking about the Holocaust didn't start with Garstin, but it started Whisper. Maybe this is the whisper.
Mm.
We have to stop it now.
Yeah.
Because if we don't stop it now and we don't do anything about it, like at the time, nobody said it was wrong what they were doing to the Jews. And look what tragedy happened.
Yeah.
The education is so important.
So important, yeah.
So that's why when I go to university or to schools or colleges and I speak about the past, it's not only that they know about the past, but that they know about the danger.
Yeah.
That if democracy collapses, what takes over can be very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
You don't know what they can do. And we have to educate the young people to realize this. When they see bullying in the school for somebody that it's a foreign or different religion or different color skin, they shouldn't become bystander.
Yeah.
They should get involved and say, this is wrong.
Yeah.
Because if you don't say it's wrong, it's always the extreme minority that influence the majority, or with persuasion, or most of the time with fear, like the Nazis did in Germany in the 30s. That it was a very small minority that brought this catastrophe on whole Europe. Intelligent people with degrees, being doctors, lawyers, and people in the intelligentsia of Germany, from professional people, they made murderers.
Yeah.
Which is hard to believe.
I know, yeah. I want to ask you just one more question. You've been so good giving us all this information. But I just wanted to ask, your film Condemned to Remember, it ended on a very kind of worrying note. And most of my listeners would be aware of this, that recently in Poland they passed a law. And you're already nodding, so I know you know what I mean. Where they made it illegal in Poland to say that the Poles had anything to do with the Holocaust. I just wanted to ask, and I'm sure I can predict your thoughts on it, but I just wanted to know your opinion on it.
Well, that's worrying also, very worrying, because what they're actually doing, they're denying the Holocaust. I was in Jewabne. And what happened there? This was done by the local population.
Yeah.
And not only that, I know it from the books or the article that I read about it, but when we were filming, it was a very interesting. We come to Jewabne with the fear that we might get into trouble with the local population. So we had a whole plan how to escape. Because don't forget, when you're filming, you have a lot of equipment on the side.
Sure.
And preparation. And if a mob comes at you, you don't want to leave this equipment. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
So we had a plan how we go about it. But in Jawabne, when we were there, when we were filming, and this was very interesting. There were a couple of men looking from a pub at us. We were setting up and we were trying not to watch. And suddenly one of the people walked over to us. And he speaks Polish. Yeah? Mm. I speak Slovak.
Yeah.
So Polish and Slovak is quite similar. So if you speak slowly, you can understand. This fellow had a little alcohol on me, you know, he was sort of, I had a mic on me, you know. He said, are you Jewish? And I said, no, this is a thing, but I'm Jewish.
Yeah.
And he said, you know what happened here? He said, what did happen here? He said, you know, the local people slaughtered Jews in this square.
Wow.
So I have the proof that actually a drunkard and a couple of other things we were talking.
Sure.
Now, I have a microphone on and everything is recorded.
Yeah.
And anyway, after he left and everything, and I said, Jerry, my producer, you know what I spoke with this fellow? I have it all recorded. It's all on the tape.
Yeah.
But we can't put it in the film.
Mm, mm.
Because you have to have a consent. You will have to give him a form.
Yeah.
With his name and everything. He has to sign it and say, yeah, I agree that it's public.
Yeah.
Because now, if you do it without a permission, he finds out.
Yeah.
It can cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
So not only I have it from literature, what have happened in Jawabne.
Mm.
There actually, people in Jawabne lived, the Jewish people lived there from the 16th century.
Mm.
They lived there, the neighbors were the best friends. And one day, with a little incitement, I think it was, with the priest was involved, they suddenly gathered all the Jews into the square. Not only they killed them, they slaughtered them. They cut them to pieces.
God.
I mean, when I was there, I was crying all the time.
Yeah.
This is now in the law that the first prosecution was made in Poland against an Argentine newspaper that reported on Jawabne.
Oh, really? Wow.
So in other words, they are guilty accusing the local people, which is a lie.
Yeah.
These were not local people. These were German dressed in a civilized, in a Polish civil clothing.
Yeah.
So in other words, they're trying to deny the Holocaust. What I'm afraid now, that country like Slovakia can do it very easily as well, because Slovakia all the time is clean. I interviewed the vice president of Slovakia, Čaplovič, and he denied, not that he denied, I had four questions to him, and I sent it in advance. And when I interviewed him, it was in Slovak. After the interview, I mean, we went to the palace there, and beautiful photography, you know, Austro-Hungarian architecture and everything. We wanted to show it. And after I interviewed him, it took about 15 minutes, but we actually wanted to put only about a minute in the film, because, you know, you film 30 hours and you make a film of 1 hour, you know. The producer asked me, well, what did he say? I said to him, Jerry, tell the truth. I don't know what he said. He was talking and talking. I don't know a word, because he was I sent him the question, so he had the question in Slovak and everything. But he talked politics.
Yes.
And the politics is that Slovakia denies any wrongdoing.
Right.
And that's their thing. But Slovakia was not occupied by Germany.
Yeah.
Everything that happened in Slovakia was done by the Slovak.
Mm.
So now they can be the second country that would bring up a law like this and say, don't involve us. We didn't. They gassed the Jews. They killed them. But the Slovaks arrested them.
Mm.
Paid the German to take them away.
Yeah.
And not only that, they paid them, in the contract they wrote, we will pay the 500 mark for every Jew, but none of them should come back.
Yeah.
No, they're slaughtering, they're killing them. So they can, that's another country. Then you have Hungary.
Yeah.
I mean, 600,000 of Hungarians perished in the Holocaust. The German didn't know them, where they live. And it was the Hungarian, the Nilas, the Hungarian police that arrested the Jews. They will want a law like it. So in other words, at the moment, it means nothing because it will only bring more accusation what they did and deliberately. But in 20, 30 years' time, where all the perpetrators are gone, all the victims are gone, they will be learning the Holocaust was done by Germany and everybody was against this. Mm. The history will be changed.
Yeah.
That's what is very dangerous. In other words, something that happened in a civilized society can happen again.
Yeah.
And therefore, if we don't teach
the
people, if the student in Poland will learn that Poland was brilliant, like today we are good people and we never did any wrong. Mm. Everything that happened in Poland was done by the German. What did they learn?
Yeah. You know, yeah. So, wow. Well, that's why it's so good that we have, well, people like yourself and records like this and documentaries and everything else. It's essential that things like this and that you keep talking. So I think the last thing I'd like to say is, please tell me where I can tell, never stop talking. And thank you so much for joining us. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
And that's it. That is the end of this interview. That is the end of what I've been so excited to bring to you guys. But of course, it's not the end at the same time. Just like Tommy Reichenthal's story did not end in 1945, this episode does not really end right here. It ends as soon as we forget what Tommy Reichenthal has talked about. So as soon as you guys stop listening to this episode, you make sure that you tell somebody about this. Make sure that you tell somebody that the truth is out there. And next time David Irving or any other idiot decides to tell you the truth about the Holocaust, direct them towards someone who was actually there and who can actually tell them factually what happened. My name is Zach Twomley. This has been the Tommy Reichenthal interview. You are a wonderful history friend or perhaps a patron, and I'm so, so thankful that you've joined me for this experience. And it has been an incredible experience for sure. Alrighty guys, the last note, if you guys would like to send me anything to let Tommy Reichenthal know what you thought, by all means do. WDFpodcast@hotmail.com is the place to send your queries, comments, questions, or anything else to Tommy Reichenthal. And who knows, perhaps he'll be on the show again sometime soon. But until then, from myself and from Tommy Reichenthal, a huge thanks, and I'll be seeing you all soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.